On the 1st of February, 1979, Imam Khomeini entered Iran with an enormous welcome. Imam's arrival broke up the last chains of the weak military hold, and the revolution gained victory. Government an opportunity to reconsider its past behavior towards Iranian people and to improve and heal its relationship with them. The U.S., however, did not show the least possible sign of change in its hostile attitude towards the revolution, its people, and its leader. On the contrary, Harold Sanders, deputy of Cyrus Vance, then Secretary of State, sent this memo to him. More interestingly, Bruce Langen, chargé d'affaires of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, called the U.S.'s behavior towards Iran wounds which were inflicted as a result of American politicians' behavior towards Iran in a memo he wrote on August 20th. On May 17, 1979, the U.S. Senate killed the already dying political relationship of Iran and the United States, passed a resolution to call the execution of Habib El-Ghanian, a Jewish millionaire, breach of minority rights and human rights. This angered millions of Iranians who witnessed the indifference of the U.S. towards the Shah's crimes. A little later, Democrat Senator Jackson supported dividing Iran in a program called Meet the Press, which flamed the hostility between the two countries. Such actions incited anger and aversion towards the U.S. But what raged Iranian revolutionary forces was the admission of the Shah to the United States. Although all diplomats in the U.S. embassy, especially Langen, the first chargé d'affaires, had warned against admitting the Shah, Carter finally gave in to the pressure groups of Kissinger, Brzezinski, the Rockefellers, and those who wanted the Shah admitted to the U.S. Nevertheless, they yielded, even though they could predict the consequences. Perhaps the first step was Secretary of State Cyrus Vance asking for Langen's opinion in this regard. Langen answered, "Even when Langen realized that the Shah's illness might be the excuse to grant him permission, he sent this telegram to the U.S. on September 30th. But the pressure of the Rockefeller, Kissinger, Brzezinski was too much, and Carter had to give up. Carter's reluctance to do so was evident in his request on October 19th, when he asked, But all these did not change a thing. On October 22, 1979, the Shah's airplane landed in New York. In Iran, not only Dr. Yazdi and members of his interim cabinet, but also people like Charles Scott, who were sent to Tehran with the definite promise of not accepting the Shah, were shot. The interim government started out immediately and did everything they could to dissuade the U.S. from proceeding or to convince it to take a moderate course of action. The proposal of the interim government was, if the Shah's illness was the reason, the Shah should resign from the monarchy, or two Iranian physicians in the U.S. should examine the Shah and inform the people, or the Shah should stay in New York and out of the reach of the media. It now seems he moved too fast. The U.S. did not pay attention to any of these suggestions. The next day, Yazdi and Bazargan went to Algeria to directly talk to Brzezinski about this issue. But Brzezinski cared more for his analysis of Iran's condition rather than the facts. He was even prepared to see the history upside down. What could possibly be the answer to such humiliation? Three days after the vain meeting of Brzezinski with the Iranian envoy, angry students entered the American embassy in Tehran and took all its staff hostage. They had planned a 48 to 72 hour siege, but after a few hours, the students were surrounded and themselves taken hostage by the revolutionized people. Naturally, the angry crowd that had recently witnessed admission of the country's dictator to the U.S. could simply overlook the little differences that were between the embassy staff and the U.S. government. The U.S. had to face the consequences of its actions, whose risk it had accepted. First, the students encountered the resistance of a few embassy staff who locked themselves in a room. They dreamed of being rescued in a few hours by the American Quick Reaction Force. Finally, the students entered the room. They discovered loads of documents which were shredded in the past few hours. The documents made the students suspicious, and they studied them for the coming months. Restoration of the shredded documents at the embassy, however, showed that what they did at the embassy was far beyond the usual diplomatic activities. A America's secret contact with Banisadr, the first president of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and the ambassador of Iran in Sweden were among the documents restored at the embassy. These two people were referred to as SDLURE and SDPLRD. Keeping the hostages safe among the crowds of angry people who surrounded the embassy and increasing hour by hour was incredibly difficult for the students. They had not even thought about it.
Food is good and it's more than adequate. And the only reason I'm losing weight, Mother, is because I decided that was one thing I could do while I was here.
And, okay. It's hard to do.
Myself and Steve Lauterbach started to go out on weekends and see Iran and attempt to meet the people. I wanted to find out what was really happening here in Iran.
While the students were patiently figuring out the hostage crisis, within the United States, there was an absolutely different situation. American media did not try to broadcast how many Iranians were violently beaten, injured, and killed in the U.S. 10 days after the hostage crisis, Carter rushed to freeze all of Iran's assets. As the crisis evolved and lengthened, Carter burned the last bridges behind him and severed relationship with Iran and started planning a major rescue operation. American military helicopters and fighters headed for the central desert in Iran in order to carry out their operation. But the operation failed miserably before it even started. After 444 days, as a last and only resort, the United States had to reluctantly sit at the negotiation table with Iran, and the American hostages could go home unharmed. Towards the end of the 20th century, the United States learned an unforgettable lesson the hard way from a few students who confronted it with bare hands.